Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Well, hey, good morning, Wellspring Church. I want to thank you guys for being here. Before we kick off week one of Aftermath, I just kind of wanted to take a moment and update you guys on me and on what's been going on in my life. As many of you already know, my father passed away a few weeks ago. And, you know, God's been good. But it's been a challenging, overwhelming season. And I tell you that to say thank you, because you have been the church to me. You've been the church to my family. And, man, we just so appreciate it. We felt your prayers. We felt your love. We felt God, Holy Spirit, sustaining us in this season. You know, if you were here for Boat Life, you know I continued to teach for 3 weeks after my father passed, because we'd already written those sermons and I was excited to be a part of that. But as we came to the end of that, you know, I talked to some trusted people, and it was pretty much agreed that I would probably need to slow down a bit to handle some stuff at home, and also just to rest and move through the grieving process. I tell you that because I want you to see the overwhelming goodness of God even in this season. Without knowing any of this was going to happen, in May of this year, before my father even got really sick, April Colquitt approached me and said she would have some conversations with her volunteers, with people in our church, and she just really felt a sense that grief was a topic that many, many people were struggling with. Loss during COVID, loss of friendships, loss of careers, loss of life. And she just asked if we would consider doing a series on grief. And I was like, man, that sounds like a great idea. And so she began praying about it, and I began praying about it. And we met in June. We actually put on the calendar a 3-week series starting today called Aftermath on grief. And this has been in the works since way before we knew anything was going to go on with my father. And then as we moved into the summer and this fall, my father got sicker and sicker. And April sort of began to take more of a leadership role in this series, and she began researching and she began learning. And as we got to the moment of my father passing, April was ready to step in, and she said, hey, I got this. I feel confident in this. And so she's actually written this series, and I've read it already, and I'm telling you, it's going to change your life. It is changing my life. It is ministering to me right now. And so I want to thank you in advance for giving me the permission to be a human for a few weeks. I've always tried to tell you guys, I'm not a hero. I'm not a Superman. I am just like you, and I am sustained by the grace of Jesus. And so for the next few weeks, I'm going to be vulnerable, and I'm going to be sustained by the grace of Jesus. I'm going to ask your permission to just be a part of this church, to walk through this grief series with you. And to allow my heart to be healed and sustained through what God has so forcefully and faithfully delivered April to deliver to us. So just wanted you to understand what was going on for the next few weeks. And many of you have asked, how can you help? Here's how you can help me right now. You can keep praying for me. You can keep praying for my family. And you can lean in for the next few weeks. You can support April just like you would support me. You can be here for her, because I promise you, what God has planned to deliver to us in the next 3 weeks is going to change our life. Because we're not just talking about how to deal with grief. We're talking about how to help people who are dealing with grief. And so that is a universal topic. So I'm excited about week one. It's going to be fantastic. Thank you for being a church where I can be vulnerable and tell you what's going on. And so without further ado, let's kick off week one. Please help me welcome April to the stage.
For those of you who don't know me, I'm April. I'm our Wellspring Kids pastor and also serve in our communications team, and that was a hard video to watch. Thank you, as my church, for letting me deliver this content to you. I have been studying and preparing for this for a while, and I'm actually ready and excited to bring you what God has been teaching me, because as Trey said, I think it's going to change our life, and I think it's going to help us be better friends and better family members for people who are in the aftermath of a great loss. But I will tell you right up front, this is a heavy topic. It's heavy. I know that. We know that as a church. And sometimes when the topic is really heavy, what we want to do is just avoid it and just not go there, because it is hard to step into very messy puddles, especially when it means getting in the weeds of our own pain, let alone someone else's. But that is not the heart of Jesus. Jesus does not run from pain. He steps right into the messiest of puddles to bring us companionship and comfort into the most vulnerable places and the most painful places of our lives. And so that is what we are going to seek to do over the next few weeks. We are going to seek to step into the messy, vulnerable places and help each other learn how to grieve better. But we're going to have some fun. We're going to laugh a little bit. I'm going to try to make you as comfortable as I can. I'm going to bring levity and laughter whenever possible. You can help by laughing at my jokes. It is totally fine for us to laugh together. Sometimes we need to laugh in order to keep from crying, right? But we also might cry a little bit. So I'm going to tell you, ladies, come prepared with your waterproof mascara. I am too, and we'll provide the tissues. But just get ready. We're going to dig into this, and we're going to dive in head first. And I know that some of you are already starting to get uncomfortable with just the thought of talking about crying and tears, so I'm going to ease up for just a minute. We do that when things get uncomfortable and when we feel like we might be on the verge of crying. Isn't that what we do? We just shake it off. Don't think about it. Stay positive. Don't talk about it, because if you do, you might start crying. When I was growing up, my mom was one of those mothers who taught us to be strong. Like, she did not coddle us. And she was a loving and nurturing mom, but she was the type of mom who didn't let us milk it if we got hurt, and she didn't let us wallow in self-pity. So if we fell down outside and scraped our knees, she brought us inside, she rinsed it off, she slapped a Band-Aid on it and said, okay, you're good now, go play. And this is just the kind of mom that she was, and we laugh about that now, but isn't that what we do as people, as adults? When we are in pain and when we're hurting, we just want to fix it and we want it to be over as quickly as possible. We might even try to convince ourselves that it really doesn't hurt that bad in the first place, that we're really okay and we can handle it and we're doing okay. And if we're not telling that to ourselves, we might be feeling that pressure from other people. As I have prepared for this, one of the things that I think I've come to is that our culture has not taught us to handle grief well. When something bad happens, or when we are discouraged, or when there's pain, or we've experienced a disappointment, the message is, you're going to be fine. Get out there and keep going. Stay strong. You've got this. Sometimes the message is, you have every right to be sad. You absolutely can be sad, but just try not to be too sad around me. Try not to be too sad around work, or try not to be too sad around the kids. Sadness is almost a sign of weakness. And I think that might be even more true for those of us who consider ourselves Christ followers. It's almost like an unspoken expectation that our pain should hurt less than other people's, because Jesus and all. Like, we should just be stronger and hurt less than other people. And just to be clear, when I'm talking about grief over the next few weeks, I'm not just talking about the loss of life, although that is usually the first thing that comes to our mind. We think about grief, we think about grieving someone, but grief can refer to a multitude of different disappointments and hurts. It might be the loss of a relationship, the ending of a marriage. It might be grieving something like infertility or miscarriage. It might be grieving the loss of a job. Sometimes we grieve when we leave familiar places and people. There might be grief when you become disabled due to age or a disability and you start to lose independence. There is grief when you feel abandoned or betrayed. Anything that once was and no longer is can lead to feelings of grief. So here's how we are going to be defining grief. The feelings of disappointment or pain that stem from something that no longer exists. Some of you, when you heard what we were going to be talking about today, you thought, well, this series doesn't really apply to me. because you haven't lost anyone. You're not grieving someone, but maybe you're grieving something. And you just didn't know until this moment that it was actually grief. So my hope for us over the next few weeks, and my hope for us today, the goal today, is that we can begin to understand that it's okay to grieve. Do you know that God has designed us to grieve? That's not to say that we are designed for grief. That's not our purpose in life. But God has uniquely created our bodies to respond to all different types of pain and loss through a series of physiological systems and processes. I have been studying so much, and you're going to keep hearing me say that because I need you to know I'm not the expert. I've just done all the research on behalf of all of us, and I'm going to share with you what I've learned. I have talked to counselors and therapists, and I have sat down and listened to people's stories of what they've experienced, and I have read books and articles, and I listened to podcasts, and I have learned some really fascinating things about grief. Do you know that there are physiological benefits to crying? Seriously. I know there are some of you who consider yourselves to be emotionally constipated. You don't cry. Like, you don't remember the last time you had a good cry. Could be men, could be women. And some of us we know are just more prone to leaking than other people. We're just leaky people. But we all need to cry. There are three different types of tears that our bodies produce. One of them is called basal tears. Those are the tears that lubricate and protect your eyes. And then there are reflex tears. Those are the kind that happen when you peel an onion or when you get something in your eye or something is burning your eyes. Those are reflex tears. And then there are emotional tears. Those are the ones that we produce when our body is responding to emotional or physical pain. And the thing about our tears is that they all are made up of salt. You probably know that. We have salty tears. But emotional tears also contain proteins and hormones that the other two types of tears don't have. So when you cry, it actually stimulates and releases endorphins in your body that help to soothe pain and create a calming effect. Did you know that? Did you know that your tears have hormones? I just learned this and it blew my mind. When you cry, it stimulates something called the parasympathetic nervous system. We're going to use some big words. We'll sound so smart. Parasympathetic nervous system can also be just called the PNS. And what that means is that it resets your system. That's why when you have a really good cry, you tend to just feel better all of a sudden. Or you might sleep better at night when you've had a good cry. It's because it's resetting your system. So husbands or wives, either one, when your spouse goes to the shower and they just need to have a good cry for a little bit, let them. It's okay, and it's going to be better for everybody in your household when they do, because they're going to reset their system and they're going to feel better. When your teenager cries uncontrollably and then flips a switch and they're laughing hysterically, you can smile about it because their body is doing exactly what it's meant to do. It's similar to the effect that physical activity has on our bodies. You know that exercising, walking, running, even something like working in the yard or cleaning house is good for you because it releases endorphins and chemicals in your body that help to treat stress and anxiety and depression. And in contrast, when we don't stimulate those systems, all of that emotional tension gets backed up in our body, and we literally are emotionally constipated. And it can cause more harm to us than if we will just cry it out, if we'll just feel those things, because it backs up our system. It can make us physically ill. It can lead to things like migraines and inflammation and digestive issues and brain fog and panic attacks, all kinds of things. That is why it is so important for us to just feel pain sometimes. Does that mean that if we exercise and cry a lot, we're not going to experience pain? No. But it's going to help. God has designed us to do that. This is just the tip of the iceberg on the reasons why it is so important to change our approach to grief. Some counselors that I talked to said they are convinced that a large percentage of the population suffers from mental and physical symptoms due to unexpressed grief. And I am not a doctor. I am not an expert. But over the next few weeks, we're going to talk more about this, about why it is so important for us to approach grief the right way. And so my hope is that we will change our approach to the way that we grieve and the way that we experience loss, not just for ourselves, but for other people. As a community of faith, as a church, my hope is that we can start to normalize what is natural and that we can walk with other people and help them experience the pain of what feels so unnatural in the moment. My hope for us today and what I believe Jesus wants you to hear and to know is that it's okay to grieve. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to scream and cry and be angry and upset when you have experienced disappointment or loss or when you're grieving. It is absolutely okay for you to be upset and to be sad about who you had or what you had or what you hoped to have. Jesus, according to Jesus, there is a better way, and according to him, it's actually good to grieve. Jesus says it's good to grieve. In his most famous message, his most famous teaching, we call it the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus begins this teaching that day by giving us a list of behaviors paired with a promise. We call them the Beatitudes. And each one of those behaviors begins with the word blessed or blessed. And it's important to know that in this context, the word blessed refers to a declaration of what is good. So Jesus says things like, blessed are the meek, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the peacemakers. It's good to be humble. It's good to be merciful. It's good to be peacemaking. And then when it comes to our sorrow and our sadness, this is what Jesus says. Blessed are those who mourn. Jesus is saying it's good to grieve and to mourn and to be sad. April, are you saying that we're supposed to be happy about being sad? No. By definition, a person who is grieving is not happy. But what Jesus is teaching us in this beatitude is that even when we're not happy, we're not hopeless. This is the promise for those who mourn. They will be comforted. Jesus is with us when we are sad, when we are mourning, when we are grieving. The good thing is not that we're sad. The good thing is that we're not alone, that Jesus is there to comfort us and to offer us companionship. If you know very much about Jesus, you know that he knew suffering well. He was well acquainted with what it was to suffer. From the moment that he arrived on our earth, he experienced rejection. People didn't believe him, and they didn't want to listen to him. He knew abandonment. He knew betrayal. He knew what it was to be accused. He was arrested and convicted and beaten and killed. And he did all of that for us. But what I want to help you see today is not how Jesus suffered, but what he does for us when we suffer. I want to look at a story with you from the Gospel of John about a brother named Lazarus and his two sisters, Mary and Martha. And these three people were very good friends of Jesus. And one day, Mary and Martha got word that Lazarus was very sick, and so they sent word to Jesus, who was traveling away in another place, and Jesus did not come right away. Mary and Martha wanted Jesus to come and heal Lazarus, but God already had a plan for how he would use the death of Lazarus to bring people to faith in Jesus. Many people would put their faith in him through the death of Lazarus. And so Jesus doesn't go to Mary and Martha until after he gets word that Lazarus has already died. And then he goes back to the town of Bethany where they live. And when he gets there, Lazarus has already been dead for 4 days. And there are all kinds of people that have come from Jerusalem, the nearby city, to console Mary and Martha. And when Martha finds out that Jesus is in town, she goes to him. John says, when Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Now, this is a story that also helps us to see that people respond to loss in a lot of different ways. Even the same situation, same family, people might respond differently. Martha goes out to meet Jesus. Mary stays in the house. She doesn't want to be around anybody. She probably just didn't want to see all the people that had gathered in town. We know from a previous story about these two sisters that Martha is very task-oriented. She is a busy, a doer, and Mary is more inclined towards silence and solitude. And so we see that in their grieving process. Martha is most likely the one who would have handled all of the tasks of her brother's death and handled all of his affairs and helped make sure people were taken care of who came to visit. And Mary is more just sitting in stillness. She's silent and probably numb. So when Martha goes out to meet Jesus, this is what she says. Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. Now, we also know that Martha is known for questioning Jesus' decisions. She's done it before, and here she's saying, Lord, where were you? If you had just gotten here sooner, we wouldn't be in this situation. But yet, she believes that God can do something to make it better. She believes that Jesus can do something to make it better, and he says, your brother will rise again. Now, after he says this, Jesus and Martha have a conversation where he's trying to explain to her what's going to happen, and she's not really getting it. She can't really wrap her mind around it, and so Jesus says, just go get Mary. And Martha runs back to the house and says, Mary, Jesus wants to see you. And that got Mary on her feet. It gave her the strength that she needed to get up and go out of the house. And so when Mary sees Jesus, this is what happens. Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him. She fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Now, Mary and Martha are both brokenhearted, but this is where they are united in their response of their loss. They both think if Jesus had just gotten there sooner, the outcome would have been different. If he had just come quicker, they wouldn't be experiencing this loss. And isn't that how we respond when we have experienced a disappointment or when we're in pain and when we're hurting? We have a tendency to rewrite a different narrative, a different ending. There is a man named Peter Crone, who is a well-known author, and he is sort of like a mind and wellness coach, and he's internationally recognized as helping celebrities and pro athletes. And this is what Peter Crone says about loss. What happened, happened, and it couldn't have happened any other way because it didn't. What happened couldn't have happened any other way because it didn't. And what we want to do is write a different ending, a could have, should have kind of ending. If you had just done this, if only blank had happened, we wouldn't be here. If you had just listened to me, if he had just come and talked to me first, God, if you had just answered my prayer, we wouldn't be here right now. But what happened, happened. And it couldn't have happened any other way because it didn't. Mary and Martha wishing that Jesus had come sooner wasn't going to change the fact that Lazarus was already dead. Now, you might know the ending to this story. You might know that Jesus actually brings Lazarus back to life. Sometimes what is lost or broken can be restored, but that's not always the case, is it? Often, that's not the case. Jesus does it here for Lazarus because many people were going to come to faith in him through Lazarus's death and through the miracle of his resurrection. but we don't always get the miracle that we want. And I don't know why. I wish I knew why, but I don't. And many times we won't know why this side of heaven. But the reason that I wanted us to look at this story today is not to show you that Jesus brought Lazarus back to life and that Mary and Martha got their miracle. The reason that I wanted to point out this story today is to show you how Jesus responded to their pain. Remember, Mary has found the strength to get out of the house and go to Jesus, and she falls at his feet, and this is what Jesus says. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her, he also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Jesus was moved and troubled when he saw them weeping. Now, Jesus is about to bring Lazarus back to life. Things are going to turn around here very quickly. Many people are going to put their faith in Jesus, and they have no idea what is about to happen. And you know what Jesus doesn't do? He doesn't say, it's okay because I work all things together for good. He doesn't say that. He makes no mention of the good that is to come. He just sees them weeping, and he is moved with empathy in that moment. And this is what he says. Where have you laid him? He asked. In other words, take me to your place of mourning. Show me. Jesus could have called Lazarus out of the grave right then and there, but instead he said, show me your place of greatest pain. Take me there, and I will go there with you. And here's what they said, come and see, Lord, they replied. And Jesus walks with them to the place where Lazarus was buried. And John tells us that as they walked, Jesus wept. You know how I know it's okay for us to cry? How I know it's okay for us to grieve? Because Jesus cried. Jesus grieved. Even when hope was around the corner. And these are not reflex tears. Jesus is not crying because the sun was too bright or some dust from the road blew into his eye. John is making it clear to us that Jesus openly cried. These are emotional tears. And when all of the people saw him crying, they said, see how he loved him? See how he loved him? Jesus loved Lazarus. He loved Mary and Martha. These were his close friends. And regardless of the hope that was just about to happen, I mean, it was right there he's about to heal and bring Lazarus back to life. But it didn't change the fact that right now, these people were hurting and they were in pain. And it caused Jesus to grieve. When we hurt, Jesus hurts. He loves us. And when he sees us hurting, it grieves his heart too. Have you ever hurt with someone, had a friend or a family member who was going through a very difficult season of life, and maybe you sat and you cried with them? Maybe you didn't do that. Maybe you just hugged them. Maybe you prayed for them, or maybe you hoped that things would get better for them. If we have the ability to show that kind of empathy towards people, imagine how much more Jesus does that for you and I. Jesus grieves with us. I had the opportunity not too long ago to sit down with a couple who lost their daughter over a year ago in an accident. And this mother told me that for a while she had this image of her just trying to climb up to Jesus. She just wanted to get as close to him in her pain as she could. And she told me that one day she finally realized that she did not have to climb up to Jesus because Jesus had already come to her in her pain. He was right there with her. Jesus said to Mary, show me where they laid him. Take me to where he is. I'll go there with you. Let's go together. That's why Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. The promise is not that we will be without pain. The blessing is that in our pain, his presence is there with us to comfort us and to console us. Jesus is with us, and we're not alone. He comes to sit with us, to cry with us, to weep with us. And I want to unburden you today, especially to the Christians who are listening online or who are in this room. You do not have to pretend to be stronger than you feel. Jesus can take it. You can unburden yourself from holding back questions and anger and hurt because he is hurting right there with you, and he understands your pain, and he grieves with us. He grieves with us. Does it mean that we'll stop hurting? No. But it means we're not alone. I want to speak very carefully about this because I know this is a sensitive topic. Sometimes we refer to grief as a process, but saying that grief is a process would mean that there's a clear beginning, middle, and end, that it's a step-by-step process, and that's just not true. I have talked to many counselors and therapists, and the fact that grief is a process just isn't really a fact. It's more of a myth. What they have told me is that depending on the severity of the loss and the depth of the pain, that grief may never go away. You might not ever be over it. What is more likely, and what should maybe be our goal, is that we grow around the grief, that we get stronger under the weight of the grief, so that it begins to feel a little bit lighter, and that we can begin to experience peace and joy in spite of that pain. And I believe that that's possible. I believe that that's possible. And that's what we're going to talk about over the next couple of weeks, is how we can have peace and joy in spite of the grief. But for today, what I believe Jesus wants you to know is that it's good to grieve. It's good to grieve. God has designed our bodies and created us to cry, to feel things, and even to feel painful things. And what's good is not that we're sad. What's good is that we're not alone and we're not hopeless when we're not happy, but that he's with us to console us, to sit with us, to cry with us. There is a psalm that has long been an expression of God's heart for those who are suffering. It's written by David. When David was trying to escape from King Saul, who was jealous of him and wanted him killed, David was on the run. He was hiding. He was trying to preserve his own life. So undoubtedly, he was in a great deal of stress and anxiety and suffering. And here's what David wrote. He knew that God saw him. He said, "You keep track of all my sorrows. You have collected my tears in your bottle. You have recorded each one in your book." Friends, there is not a heartbreak that you feel or a tear that falls that God does not see and feel with you. Does it mean you won't hurt? No, but it means you're not alone. He loves you and he grieves with you. He grieves with you. You know something that I think is pretty incredible? It's not that Jesus is with us in our pain, but that he also puts other people in our path of pain. God designed our bodies to grieve in such a way that it is visible when we cry. Our tears are a visible sign of what is happening internally, and I don't think that's an accident. That is a benefit of crying, so that when other people see us, it's an indicator to them that something is not okay. Isn't that amazing that God would do that for us? that he would make our pain so visible that other people can come alongside us and say, are you okay? How can I help? God wants to sit with you in your pain, but so do we. We need community when we are hurting. We need Jesus, but we also need each other. And so over the course of the next few weeks, we're going to learn how we can do that for each other. At the end of this series, we are going to begin something here at Wellspring. We're going to start a grief group. I would highly encourage you to sign up to be a part of that group if you are in a season of loss or if you're walking with someone who is in a season of loss and pain. Because we need Jesus to comfort us, but we also need his community of believers to comfort us. He created and designed our bodies to systematically respond to grief, but he also designed us to need other people in that pain and in that hurt. So I want to encourage you to take a step to sign up for that grief group if that's something that you need in your life. God has given us people to help us when we are hurting. And today, what I hope you will hear and what you will know leaving here today is that it is good to grieve, not because you're sad, but because you're not alone. Even when you're not happy, you are not hopeless. Jesus is with you, and he grieves with you. And we will too. I'm going to close us in prayer, and then TJ is going to sing a song for us. And I want to invite you to stay seated while he sings and just listen to the words that he sings and allow your hurt to begin to surface and let him just sit with you wherever you are today, whether you are grieving or whether you're sitting in joy today. Just let God sit with you and feel with you. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your love for us. Thank you for your compassion and your empathy for us. Even when we are hurting, God, we're not hopeless because we have you. And we don't hurt any less, but there is comfort in knowing that you are near, that you are present, and that you understand. God, I pray for every person in this room who is sitting in a place of loss and pain and hurt today, whoever is disappointed. Lord, I pray that they would open their heart to you, that they would not resist your compassion, but that they would turn to your compassion, that they would be open to how you want to help and how you want to heal. And I pray that you would give each of us eyes to see how we can come alongside others in their pain, that we can help them and support them and encourage them. As we continue to learn more about what grief is and how we can better approach it, God, I pray that you would just teach us, that you would mold us and make us to be more like you, that we might be an expression of your love to the people around us. It is in your son's name that we pray. Amen.